So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
So, take a look.
Welcome everyone to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. We have a huge edition of the show today. We are going to be reviewing the 1999 Royal Rumble from Anaheim, California, and this is it is Royal Rumble month, so I guess the Royal Rumble vibe is going through Review Away this week.
How did we end up picking this particular Royal Rumble, John?
I think a lot of people actually. I went by Facebook because about a month ago I had posted that, you know, January is coming up. What Royal Rumble events would you guys like us to review? Because obviously there's over 20 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And 1999 seemed to get the most votes. So that was that was our criteria for doing this one. But did want to quickly, because we have also got feedback that people are a big fan of you and I just kind of chatting about some stuff. So I wanted to know how your week was.
My week? I don't know. I got to say this is a very awkward forced conversation, I feel.
Just think that the mics aren't on. This is just like we're randomly talking during the week. How was your week?
I guess my week's been all right. As is life, it was filled with ups and downs.
What was the up and what was the down? The biggest ones.
The up, perhaps, was I discovered this Japanese TV website.
Oh.
It allows you to stream Japanese TV.
Ooh.
But at the same time, there were guys that were posting up their own webcams and allowing you to view their webcams. And I went into this chat room with this just Japanese dude who didn't know a lot of English, but he was just responding to everybody's questions and all that. So like, I just went into the chat room. I started typing stupid questions like, do you believe in God? And he would read it. I also asked him...
That's awesome.
I asked him, like, do you smoke marijuana? When he read marijuana, he was like, marriage? No, I am not married.
Oh, that's great.
And the down,
the down.
The down, I guess, would be an argument I had with my mom, where she said if I wasn't living in the house, she would be divorcing my dad right now.
I don't know how to respond to that, Wei.
Well, you asked me what my down was, and
so your parents would get divorced if it wasn't for you.
Well, my mom's like that.
Oh, okay.
She's been saying this for 20 years.
I don't want to, like, at all make light of this, but actually there was some news coming out on Sunday that Ludwig Borga passed away. Tony Holm, did you hear about this news?
I did not hear about this.
Yeah, he was found dead in Finland on Sunday, and he was actually the first opponent of Randy Couture in the UFC.
Really?
And, of course, he was also...
I had no idea. That I didn't know.
Yeah, he was, of course, in the WWF for just about a year as Ludwig Borga. And if you go to my Facebook page, everyone, and add me, I've put up a promo of Ludwig Borga where he cuts this great, great promo that's absolutely cheesy. So,
that's sad.
Yeah.
Another one.
This is really ridiculous. I'm just here on my Facebook page now with this promo, and I've since seen that 8 people have responded, and one of them wrote, "What the hell happened to him?" Well, he passed away. So that's the answer. Ludwig Borga dies at the age of 47. Wikipedia actually has their math wrong right now, and it's listed at 46, though they might have corrected it.
Which is rare for Wikipedia, because they usually have everything right.
I did want to quickly tell you my quick story about going to L.A. this past week.
Yes.
I went there on behalf of the Fight Network. And now that this is after the law, we have announced that The Rock will be on the show January the 24th, and he was the secret guest that I got to chat with this past week, which to me was a pretty big one because I've kind of prided myself since being the producer of The Law of being able to get just about every name on The Law. Mm-hmm. I have talked to Triple H. I did interview him for about 5 minutes. That was a tough one. I got Austin. We got Goldberg, Hogan, but The Rock and Shawn Michaels are the two elusive ones. And The Rock I thought we would never get because he doesn't do radio interviews, specifically wrestling ones. So the fact that we are able to get The Rock, I was very proud of that.
Congratulations, man. Dude, in the past month, you've got Hogan and you've got The Rock.
I got WrestleMania 18. Yeah. Very happy. But
good for you.
I will share a quick story from the Thursday night I was there in the hotel I was staying at. I met two fellow Canadian journalists, and we went for a beer in the lounge area, and we sit down, and the Texas-Alabama bowl game is playing, and one of the guys I'm with is like, "Hey, did you see who just left there?" I'm like, no. Carlton Banks from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
No.
Just left, and I missed him.
Alfonso
Ribeiro.
Yes.
It's not unusual to be loved by an Alfonso. It's not unusual to have fun with anyone. But when I see you hanging about with anyone, it's not unusual to see me cry all the time. It's not unusual to cry all the time. But when I see you out of power, it's such a crime.
That was your highlight, huh?
I didn't even get to see him. It was my highlight just knowing he was at the table right next to me, and he left. So it was I was very
Alfonso Ribeiro.
Yeah, and I also
wow.
Julie Andrews walked by me, and I tried to get an interview with her because she's in The Tooth Fairy, the movie that I was there.
Were rubbing elbows with the stars.
Oh yeah,
in Hollywood, man.
Oh yeah, they were all asking about Wei Ting. They're all no, Julie Andrews actually listens to Review Away.
Does she
each week? No, she doesn't. But that was good. Just a quick little recap.
I look forward to that interview very much. Sean was telling me a little bit about everything that happened. I won't spoil it for you, but it sounded like a pretty packed 6.5 minutes.
Well, that's the thing, and I don't want to, you know, over-promote this fact. It's not like I got 40 minutes with him like I did with Hogan. I was given 5 minutes. I stretched it to 6.5, but I will say it's like an entertaining TV match. I thought it was, for the amount of time I got, I made every single question something that our fan base would be intrigued by, so much so that later on I heard through an intermediary that the people were a little annoyed at the Canadian kid who just asked wrestling questions. But that's fine.
You're doing your job, man. Awesome.
It's all for you. You listeners. Yeah. I'm not worried about Tooth Fairy questions. So, nonetheless, that was my week. And as well, I forgot to mention this last week, but I want to thank all of the people who emailed me over the last 2 weeks about my iPod problem that I shared. I'm trying to get music off my iPod and onto my computer, because I've recently got a new iPod. About 7 of you guys sent me programs and solutions for it, so thank you very much. I have been super lazy because my iPod, it broke, and now my old one seems to be working fine, so I've been kind of lazy about setting up my new iPod because I know this one will crash very soon, but I'm kind of wearing it till it's dead, so I have not actually used the iPod programs you have sent, but they are all saved for the day I sit down and transfer all my 1,400 songs.
Good. Thank you for the update. I've been so curious about your iPod
haven't.
Problem.
But now we're going to get to the review portion of Review Away, because that is what we are here to do. And it's the Royal Rumble 1999 from Anaheim, California at the Arrowhead Pond. And at this point in time, Way, this event took place 3 weeks after our review last week of that January 4th Nitro, all in that same January 1999.
Yeah, what was odd about doing that review last week was the whole issue surrounding that last podcast was the January 4th, 1999. It was the day that we saw the finger poke of doom between Hulk Hogan and Kevin Nash. And it was also the same night that Mick Foley won the world title for the first time. And then the next day on Impact, the show closes with Kevin Nash, Hulk Hogan, and Mick Foley all in the same scene. I just thought that was so bizarre. 11 years later.
11 years later, and we haven't evolved at all. And no. I would say it was very, it was very exciting to watch that on Monday night. That was probably the most fun I've ever had watching wrestling. Like, we were all at Jason Agnew's house. There was like 7 of us, and it was a very good time. But you also look at, wow, where have we gone? And I actually posted that picture on the Review Away group earlier this week about a guy had the screensaver of what was going on at, like, it was like 9:02 p.m. and we had Sean and Brett on one and the whole NWO on the other. And it was just amazing that this is where we are in 2010. Yeah. But I digress, Way. Back to 1999 when all of these players were still relevant, and we had Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler on commentary because, if you remember at this time, Jim Ross was suffering from Bell's palsy, and he was off TV at this point in time, and Michael Cole had stepped in.
Jim Ross was actually backstage at the time in the gorilla position doing all the
That's true, and we should mention that Beyond the Mat was filming this event backstage. So if you watch Beyond the Mat, it's really interesting if you had already seen this event, because watching this whole event, I kept going back to Beyond the Mat. And,
absolutely.
And,
we'll get to the main scenes from it throughout the show.
Wait, I had an exclusive that you did not have, because we should say that you watched this on a VHS I recorded of the actual event.
Yep.
Meanwhile, I watched this online thanks to, I will call our hookup correspondent, Justin Arthur, who for the last two events has had them online for me to watch, which is tremendous.
Thank you,
Justin.
Especially
when I'm getting clips. So, Justin Arthur, you are currently the MVP of Review Away.
Thank you for promoting piracy. But if you do UFC pay-per-view, you will get sent to jail, so avoid that at all costs. Dana White will find you.
Yes, but personally. WWE, it's all fine. So I got to see the home video, and it had the WWE home video exclusive, and this had interviews with Road Dogg, Jim Cornette, Big Boss Man, and Mark Henry talking about how they're going to win the Royal Rumble tonight, and Road Dogg even saying, I'm working double duty tonight, and I'm in the opener with the Big Boss Man. And Jim Cornette, by far, cut the second-best promo on this whole show, on this video exclusive. He said, the gentlemen aren't going to act like gentlemen, and the lady better not act like a lady. In China, and did a way better job than I just did paraphrasing.
Wow. No, just go ahead.
The theme for this show, Way, was No Chance in Hell, which everyone knows Vince McMahon uses now. And did you know, I looked this up, it was performed by the Chris Warren Band, who also does the DX theme.
I'm pretty sure I knew that, just because they sound
no
the
clue.
Same.
No clue. I'd never really put two and two together there.
Well, smarten up.
It's the Royal Rumble, 1999, Way. The first ever WWF pay-per-view I ever ordered on pay-per-view.
Really? Actually. Wow. This tape that you are holding in your hand is historical. Anyway, 10-10-220 presents the Royal Rumble.
Complete with a blimp, Way. They had the 10-10-220 blimp, which it's amazing as you look at the evolution of sponsors as we've been reviewing these from Stridex to Nestle Crunch all the way up to a phone company now with 10-10-220.
This was at the peak of their success, wasn't it?
10-10-220. So apparently you would dial 10-10-220 and you would save on long distance. I think that was the deal.
I thought it's not a collect call company. It's not like 1-800-COLLECT.
I have no idea. I never used 10-10-220.
Or 1-800-CALLATT.
God.
Remember David Arquette?
Yeah, where you... You dial it, and that was the commercial. Where
and it's all in a line.
Fast.
Oh. The numbers are all in a line.
Oh, God, that was lame. Our first matchup, Way, the Road Dogg, the reigning hardcore champion, taking on the Big Boss Man. This was a non-title match, so the hardcore title not on the line.
No, this it was not a hardcore
match. This was not
match.
Into the confines of a hardcore match.
Why give out such an important match on this pay-per-view? Why give out such
save
an important
save that for
time?
TV.
Yeah.
Michael Cole noted it's the quickness and agility of the Road Dogg against the power of the Big Boss Man. I don't know how quick and agile Road Dogg was even in 1999.
Yeah.
Hardcore title not on the line. They announced it as a special challenge match. And Lawler says if the match was for the title, that the Boss Man would have killed Road Dogg. I then noted, what a shitty opening match. The high spot, 6 minutes into the match, was Boss Man oversold an elbow by Road Dogg and fell to the floor. Some fan had a sign at ringside, Way, that I could not stop looking at the entire time, and it was for the old Tripod websites.
Yes.
It was members.tripod.com/Foley. I looked this up, and it was a... It has since been taken down and was an error.
That is
do you remember?
Shame.
Do you remember Tripod?
I do remember Tripod.
GeoCities, there was Tripod, there was X-Page. I don't know if you remember. I used to have an X-Page.
You used to have an X-Page.
E-X-P-A-G-E.
That I did not remember. What was your X-Page of?
It was just wrestling stuff. I was like 14,
God.
And I used to, I wrote about wrestling.
Of course.
I was a real nerd, Way. I've clearly evolved out of that, as you can see. Talking about
you're really cool, man.
The Royal Rumble 99.
Yeah.
Awesome. What did you take away from this match, Wayne?
Road Dogg. Well, Road Dogg, Jesse James. I mean, just looking at this guy, 11 years later, you just have to ask, how did he ever get as over as he was?
Especially, Wayne, when you look at the physiques on this show, this is the most gassed up roster of guys we've ever done a review of.
And here you have
Road Dogg,
this pale dude with...
Looked like a crack addict.
With a dreadlock mullet. That's what he had.
He just visually looked horrible. It was like this guy just caught fire by being part of a gimmick at a hot time and was allowed to wear a t-shirt.
And allowed to talk like Snoop Dogg. I guess like hip-hop was breaking into the mainstream at the time, and no matter how you looked, as long as you could say for Shizzle, you were edgy.
Not to mention, he had huge heat at the time with The Rock, like one of the top guys in the company. This guy was like Teflon. Horrible look, bad political decisions.
I think once the whole DX thing finally fell through and he did that thing with K-Quick for a brief time, that's when people really started to realize this guy is shit.
The Road Dogg. Sidewalk slam by Boss Man for the win. The highlight of the match for me was when Boss Man was smothering the mouth of Road Dogg, and he's yelling at ringside, "King, can it breathe? Can he breathe?" And Lawler just giggled.
Okay.
We then go to video highlights of Billy Gunn mooning Ryan Shamrock with a thong on, but it was all part of his master plan to get a match with Ken Shamrock.
Hmm.
It was very smart by Billy Gunn to earn a title shot, because the title was on the line in this next match. Ken Shamrock defending the Intercontinental Championship against Billy Gunn.
Yeah.
With a one-hour time limit, they announced.
Oh, boy.
Howard Finkel, a one-hour time limit. I would have been scared if these two even teased going an hour.
They could have gone Sakuraba, Hoyce Gracie.
Okay, now logically, why would there be a one-hour time limit on this match? When you have five matches and then a 60-minute Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. This could not have gone an hour.
It's true.
What, were they going to cancel the Rumble if this match went the time limit? Why did they even say one-hour time limit? Just say scheduled for one fall.
Yeah, that's a good question. Do they still do that anymore?
They never announce time limits. WWE never does time limits.
Well, thank God they didn't go an hour. Billy Gunn at this point looks just like the Road Dogg. I mean, riding on the DX wave of success, he looks like he's on top of the world at this point. Just recently won the IC title. Did he win the King of the Ring yet at this point? No, the King of the Ring.
He won the King of the Ring later
right?
that year.
Yeah, yeah.
He was still a babyface at this time.
Yes. He in his promo, he does the whole typical DX thing, and then at the end he says. This part just perplexed me because he says, "If you ain't down with WBMC, we got two words for you."
I missed that.
Now, what is WBMC?
WBMC. World's... WBMC.
See, I
need to see this.
WBMC. Well, I Googled it, and here's what I came up with. It could be one of three things.
I have no idea.
The World... Beard and Mustache Championships. Or the Winkler Bergthandler Mennonite Church. Or the West Bengal Medical Council. So I guess... I don't know. Billy Gunn was shouting out one of these groups.
How did I miss that? Because I would have written that down if I had heard that. I totally missed it.
Yeah.
Wow.
He said that.
I just picked up from that promo where, "Shamrock, come on down so you can get your ass whipped." And I might have just fast-forwarded after that point. We should note Ryan Shamrock, who was playing Ken's sister, was actually dating Ken at the time of this angle, and then later hooked up with Sean Waltman. Cole mentions like three times during this match that this is the first of four title matches tonight. And Cole, I just kept writing down Cole quotes because they were great tonight. "The world's most dangerous man has been in fact dangerous tonight." Then Lawler came back with, "Shamrock smells blood," and instantly the camera was on Shamrock, and he said, "I smell blood."
No.
Instantly, like seamlessly.
Wow.
I noted
Didn't notice that.
Cole called a guillotine choke a unique maneuver and then called it a vicious front face lock. Tim White got knocked out, so Val Venus came down and hit a DDT onto Shamrock, and... they announced that Shamrock is really upset at Venus because he gyrated in front of Ryan. So you were essentially doing the exact same angle with two different wrestlers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Shamrock gets the ankle lock after a near fall by Gunn, and Gunn taps out.
I actually thought this match was decent, largely because of Ken Shamrock.
I think was... you know, not a spectacular worker, but by no means was he.
Yeah.
When you look at some of the guys who have come over from MMA
yes.
and trying to work a pro wrestling match.
Actually, like, John, he started out as a pro wrestler. A lot of people
forget
that.
That's true. He was an indie worker as a Vinny Torelli.
Well, he was a pro wrestler, and then he, even before Pancras, he trained in pro wrestling.
Yeah, yeah, so. out of California. So you're right. He did have that base behind him, but
yeah.
I mean, just doing MMA for the solid, like, 5 years prior,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he came into it and was almost retrained by Brett at the time. And
yeah, good use of psychology in this match, focusing on the leg, and he got that ankle lock really over.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, everyone thinks of the ankle lock with Kurt, and I think there was somewhat of an education process mm-hmm. with that hold when Angle came
yeah.
in, because that move was instantly over when he
uh-huh.
started using it, like after the Olympic slam.
That move in particular, like really, it's really got a vicious, almost like psychotic feel to it that you know, Ken Shamrock started with, but like Kurt Angle, I'm sure, was totally inspired by and adopted for himself.
We go backstage. Vince McMahon is with Shane, Pat Patterson, and Jerry Briscoe. And I remember these vignettes, the training videos with Shane and Vince. And this, to me, was when Shane was at his best. Because these videos, he was just playing like the crazy trainer, getting Vince ready and with the motivational, you know, sayings and everything. And I really enjoyed Shane in those videos.
Mm. How long had he been on TV and up until this point?
He had done, because remember, we did that Survivor Series
yeah.
from the
November
prior to that. Yeah. And that's when they did the heel turn with Shane.
Yeah.
So he had been on TV, I think, because he started out as a commentator the previous summer. So probably 6 months at this point he had been
okay.
on TV.
Yeah.
We go then to our second of four title matches. X-Pac defending, remember, the European title way against Gangrel.
Yes.
All I noted in this was X-Pac hit the X-Factor for the win, and Gangrel looked heavy.
Yeah, Gangrel, to me, he always had the coolest entrance, perhaps, at the time in
awesome
the WWF.
Entrance.
But I always thought he didn't have much substance besides the blood spitting. Like, I don't know. I didn't like him. All three DX members were in the matches so far, so this is really just a showcase for DX. Cole calls X-Pac a martial arts expert. Like he's always been referred to as a martial arts expert, but what martial art is Sean Waltman an expert of?
I don't know. I don't think he has any jiu-jitsu training. I don't know if he's...
On IMDb.com, it says he's a judo black belt. Have you ever seen any instance of this judo?
I have never heard of X-Pac being a judo black belt, but maybe we can try and find that out. Kevin Kelly is backstage with Triple H, China, and Road Dogg. Kevin Kelly was actually a former employee at the Fight Network.
No, he was not. This is a different Kevin Kelly.
Oh,
not.
Yeah, you're right.
They looked about the same, though, in physique.
The Road Dog asks if anyone has seen a fight in the Armstrong family and clarifies that, yes, we are a family. That was probably inside for about no one who is aware of his brothers being in the industry.
Yeah.
And then Hunter says, tonight it's every man for himself. And then China adds, and woman.
That's not a bad China voice, I gotta say.
Yeah, China was in the Royal Rumble, everyone, which... They built up China being in the Rumble so big that the one woman and the payoff was fantastic.
Fantastic, yes.
Shane McMahon comes out to the ring and he introduces Luna. And then Shane says Sable has suffered a chronic back injury and McMahon wants Sable to forfeit the championship. Sable comes to the ring and says, ring the bell. And it's Sable versus Luna for the women's title in a strap match.
They had done this injury angle on Heat, and I was just surprised watching this whole show. The number of times that they would throw to the Heat.
It's like their go-home show was...
Yeah.
They did all their big angles on Heat. There was a big slap where Vince McMahon slaps Austin.
They had Mick Foley, your champion, wrestle a singles match against Mabel on Heat. They had Austin run over a bunch of cars with a limousine monster truck.
It was way bigger than Raw the previous Monday. They did everything on Heat. And granted, you might think, oh, Heat, you're getting known. Back in the day, Sunday Night Heat did, like, the numbers that Raw does now. Like, it wasn't crazy that Heat would do a 3.5 or a 4.0.
That was their B-show, right? They had no SmackDown.
Yeah, they had no SmackDown. It's amazing. Less is more, everybody. Then we go to, the women's match. So Shane is on commentary with Cole and Lawler, and was not a fan of Shane here. He was ripping on Michael Cole. This was the same finish as every single WWF strap match I've ever seen, where the heel is choking the babyface and goes to hit the turnbuckle, and they're dragging the babyface, who, without the heel realizing it, hits them. And then at the fourth one, we had the Stalker Torrey run from ringside, attack Luna, and Sable hit the fourth turnbuckle first and gets the win. And
not Torrey Wilson, but the other Torrey.
This was the other Torrey, who they never talk about. She did something that I've never heard the story about.
She dated Kane.
Yes, that's right. And she dated Kane once upon a time.
And said Kane's balls were burnt.
That's right. That's right. Torrey. So Sable retains the championship. Backstage, Big Boss Man is talking to Test and Ken Shamrock. This was a little spooky, as two of the three have passed away, saying he'll do whatever it takes to get the $100,000. And we should explain that the Vince McMahon had put up a $100,000 bounty for anyone to eliminate Steve Austin from that night's Royal Rumble. So the title shot was actually secondary. It was the 100 grand everyone was going for. And then we go to a video package setting up the I Quit match between Mankind and The Rock. And I thought this was a solid back and forth. And there's a line in this video that I've always remembered. And maybe it's a different line than you're thinking of. But this line that Foley has where it says, "Rock, how does it feel to be in a match that you can't win and I can't lose?" And I always have remembered that line. I don't know why, but I thought these two back and forth were just fantastic.
This was, if you compare any of the promo work from this feud with anything today,
it's non-existent.
Yeah,
it's non-existent.
It's amazing. These two were at the peak of their game. The highlight of that promo package was The Rock's line. "The Rock's going to put you through the Spanish announce table, the French announce table, Ho Chi Minh Chow, the Chinese announce table."
Were you offended by that?
I was so offended, but I loved it.
We now go to the I Quit match. Mankind defending the championship against The Rock. And lots of comedy early with the mic work in this I Quit match, where they would go, "Say I quit," and you'd get some sarcastic answer from The Rock. And I wasn't crazy about it.
I enjoyed it. I mean, it showcased their personality while you had all this happen. I guess you're right. It could take away slightly.
It did work. The match did work to the violence at the end of it. They got the comedy out of the way, which I guess at that time, Rock was a very comedic character. But
they both were.
They both were. Now, they worked to a spot where they climb up to the entranceway, and Foley goes through this electrical equipment, and all I can think of is the scene from Beyond the Mat where we got Stand By Me playing underneath this. As they, in Beyond the Mat, they almost play this off as like a shoot or something, because they go to Mick Foley's daughter, who's in the front row, as the lights go out.
Well, let's talk about the actual match, and then get to that chair shot scene.
I really just, that's all I know.
Oh, okay. Well, basically, this is your very much like a typical garbage match. But I thought what separated this from all the other garbage matches that we were to see in the future was just the strength of their personalities, accentuated by, you know, their ability to use a microphone in this match, and their constant playing to the crowd, and the fact that this was perhaps the third or fourth match in the series, you know, which sort of gave it a grudge match feel, where weapons and all that stuff would be necessary. Not the first in a typical hardcore title match that you'd see later on. So yes, you're right. They climb to the second deck of the stands. Foley jumps off, or The Rock knocks Foley off onto a rigged electrical set, and suddenly the set collapses with Foley on top of it, and the lights go off in the whole arena, which was a nice touch. They even had Shane McMahon come out looking concerned for Foley.
What I liked about it too is that today with WWE, when they'll do, they have done spots like this where it's, they have pyro and shit go off, and granted there was an element of that in this, but it was subtle enough that it looked like something had just blown up, and it wasn't some gigantic production where it's, they've done it with John Cena before where it's like he'll hit and it's just like, you can't even suspend disbelief that something has actually happened. It was just, he fell down, some sparks came up, and it was presented as a real big deal.
And they hit the light switch in the arena, which...
That was it.
Worked perfectly.
It was simple. And yeah. I mean, these two, I found that just, they really, really gelled together well. And this, to me, was what turned Rock into a main event guy.
Yeah. Back in the ring, Rock handcuffs Foley behind his back. Foley still manages to, however, use low blows and use his feet to fight back. But the Rock eventually delivers the corporate elbow onto a chair on Foley's head. But Foley still refuses to give up. And then we see the barrage of chair shots begin.
And this is where I just completely started to hate this match.
It was tough to watch, man.
Like, I hated watching this even then, and now it's like, we've gotten so much, like, about what, like, Chris Nowinski's done, about the dangers of, like, concussions and the unprotected chair shots, and there were, I counted off fucking 10 unprotected chair shots, and the last one was just disgusting, because Foley's back was to Rock, and he just fucking swung for the fences at the back of his head, which is the most dangerous spot to hit someone.
It was ridiculous.
And it even gets worse. So when you read Foley's book, they had agreed on 4, and it was like Rock just went into business for himself and made the decision to go with 10. Like, to me, that's just unforgivable.
Yeah, and if you thought it was tough just watching it on your own, try watching it from the perspective of the dude's wife and four and 6-year-old.
There,
you know?
I just this totally took me out of the match, and I was not a fan of this at all. Yeah. And I know later it was, you know, wasn't there a story too that like afterwards that Rock didn't come back to see if he was okay?
What I had done
I
actually
hearing about that.
On YouTube, and I can post this link up on the Facebook group later. But on YouTube, some dude actually put this scene from Beyond the Mat onto YouTube with Mick Foley running commentary throughout it. I guess it was a bonus on the DVD.
Oh, okay.
And Foley talks about all that. He says he very much regrets the incident and thought it was a great match before all that stuff happened. He said also that the whole chair shots were his idea, but he never expected that type of reaction. He also said that he had no idea his kids reacted that poorly until he saw the movie. He said what was to be 5 shots turned to 11 shots.
Oh, it's 5.
Yeah, and he said he was very disappointed.
5 turned to 12?
No, 11.
Oh, 11.
Which is,
I counted 10, and there were, I'm sure there was probably an extra one.
And he said he was very disappointed by The Rock not coming backstage to check on him, and he said he felt like he gave his body to somebody who didn't appreciate it. So,
yeah, that was just, to me, it's like that, it stops being an entertaining match. And I know there's people, to me, this was more violent to me in retrospect than even the Hell in a Cell. Like, I know the Hell in a Cell was a lot of vicious bumps that at least he knew he was taking. They're both very violent matches, but to me, it's just the headshots. To me, I just never want to see unprotected chair shots.
Like
in
Mick Foley at this point in time, he really, I'm not sure what was going through his head, because like he built his legacy on being this type of guy. But, fuck, man, no one should be doing that stuff today.
So from there, the match ends. Really shitty finish, too, Way. Like, this was a, you know, the match built up, and the finish to me just sucked. If I was paying on pay-per-view, which I did, so I'm going to bitch about this, Foley takes that last sick chair shot to the back of the head, so he's down stomach first on the entrance area, and Rock puts the mic down to the side of his face, and then you hear the loudspeakers of him saying, "I quit, I quit, I quit," from a previous promo where I think it was something like, "I'll never say I quit, I quit, I quit." Mm-hmm. To me, that's such a cheap finish to get out of a pay-per-view match. That's a TV finish at best. For your main event title match, I did not like it. I understand they were building to a rematch, but to me, that's they were building to a free match at the Sunday Night Heat, the halftime Heat show the next weekend.
I guess my whole thing was, if they had that ability, why couldn't have they done this earlier before the chair shots? I guess you had to knock the guy out, but couldn't you? I don't know.
I guess the story was, here's this guy, he's taken all this punishment, and he never gave up. But I was not a fan of the chair shots, and the finish, to me, that was just, that was such a cheap ending. It's like, you know.
I thought it was a little creative. I mean, it's something that hasn't been done before for an I Quit match. I liked the match. I thought it was a great match. It was actually PWI's fan-voted match of the year, 1999.
Wow. Well, PWI says so. It wasn't.
No, well, I personally thought it was, too.
It was a very good match.
Yeah.
I will say, these two were able to keep this feud fresh because I looked this up. They did a match. They did one at the Survivor Series we reviewed. The next month, they did it the December pay-per-view. Then they did that January 4th Raw. They did the Rumble. Mm-hmm. Then they did Halftime Heat.
Yeah.
And then they did the February pay-per-view. Yeah. Six, like, big matches in a course of, like, 3-4 months, which is... And then, actually, I remember that because at the February show, they did some... double count out or a no contest, and the next night on Raw they did the final match, which was a title change. So that's seven matches, and it was to me the feud that really elevated The Rock to a main event level, courtesy of Mick Foley.
Yeah.
Now we go to the Royal Rumble, and I will say this way: I very much miss Howard Finkel giving out the rules of the Royal Rumble and Jerry Lawler breaking his balls over them.
Let's go up to Howard Finkel.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time for the 1999 Royal Rumble match. Here are the rules. In just a moment, those individuals who are numbers 1 and 2 will enter the ring and the match will begin. Then, every minute and a half thereafter, another superstar enters the ring according to the number that they drew. Remember, in this contest, it is every man for himself. Elimination occurs when a superstar is thrown over the top rope and both feet must touch the floor.
Okay, Howard.
If an individual is thrown through the ropes and onto the floor, that does not constitute elimination.
All right,
again,
we know.
Over the top and onto the floor, both feet touching.
What a blowhard.
The winner of this contest will be the last person that is in the ring after all participants have entered, and that winner of the match will then meet the World Wrestling Federation champion at WrestleMania 15.
Anything else? We only got an hour left, you moron.
It's all built around Steve Austin and Vince McMahon. Austin is first in, and then Vince, and wow, Vince McMahon.
My God, jacked. Yeah. This was Vince's first ever match, but it was not the first unveiling of his body.
This was just unbelievable. And for those curious, everyone, Vince is not considered a performer now, and he is not tested by the wellness policy. Just for anyone out there that is curious, the whole build-up to this was such a big deal because Austin's new contract he signed stated he could not hit Vince unless it was a match, which... That did tie in well, that it was Shane who signed Austin back, and he got that little thing in before he did the heel turn. So Austin clearly not reading over the contract accordingly.
Okay.
I don't know how you want to run through this way. I kind of did list the order of the entrance
and
just some notes with each one. But
monumental moments we'll list. Well, starting off, McMahon, Austin in the ring together, and Austin immediately starts beating on McMahon. That is until number three participant, Golga,
who's
walks
John
out.
Tenta.
John Tenta. Austin, while he's eliminating Golga, McMahon crawls out of the ring, and Austin follows him to the back of the arena in a Royal Rumble.
Yes, they leave the
ring. They leave the ring.
And they fight throughout the crowd. There's a fan with a sign that says Vince on juice, and Lawler acknowledges it and says he's not on the juice.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, actually does acknowledge it.
Down under the bottom rope. He is not eliminated. Neither is Stone Cold, because they went through the ropes, not over the top. Both are still in this matchup.
He's not on juice either. Get out of here.
They fight into the ladies' room, and Test and Ken Shamrock are there to attack Austin.
In a Royal Rumble.
In a Royal Rumble, yes. And in the women's room. I don't know why it was the women's room. Darren Drozdov comes out at number 4. Edge is number 5. Michael Cole says, there is that inner rage, that inner fury from Edge, who his gimmick was he would attack someone, and then he'd go, ah! And yell like a hyena.
Yeah.
They are trying to get a camera backstage because apparently their cameraman was taken out. Goldberg is number 6 in, and I will say that at this point in time, after Goldberg's booking from that January 4th Nitro onwards, he might have been more over than Bill Goldberg at this point.
Yeah.
And then he's thrown out in 7 seconds. Mm-hmm. They then show Austin laying in the women's washroom, and they just show Shamrock and Bossman leaving with Bossman holding his nightstick, and then Austin is like stomach first on the women's washroom, and I don't know. I just thought of the Shawshank Redemption. And if Tim Robbins knew mixed martial arts, he would have been able to avoid that scene.
Yes, you're right.
Steve Blackman is number 7, called another up-and-coming young superstar by Michael Cole. Dan Severn was number 8,
wow,
who came in and immediately administered a takedown into Steve Blackman's open guard, and then Blackman gave up his back without any sort of a fight. Horrible.
Well, you know, mixed martial arts was still relatively new at the time, John.
Yeah, but Steve Blackman, I thought he had some cred. He's the lethal weapon here. They show Austin being taken out into a stretcher to an ambulance, and then the ambulance takes off with Steve Austin. So I guess Austin is gone for the whole night.
He's gone, yeah, that's it.
That's it. Let's look at who might win. And next in was Tiger Ali Singh.
Jeet Singh.
No, it's Tiger Ali Singh.
Oh.
The father was Tiger Jeet Singh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Come on. Then the Blue Meanie was number 10. And then
what a fine collection of low to mid-carders.
I was going to say, these are your alternatives.
WWF.
Cole stated, well, Edge and draws have been there a long time, and I looked down. It's been every 90 seconds, so that means Edge had been in for 8.5 minutes, and draws have been in there for a full 10 minutes. Yeah, Iron Man here. Number 11, there was no one coming out, and then we go backstage, and Mabel, fresh off his full singles match with the world champion on Heat, attacks Mosh of the Headbangers and takes his spot. And then...
Mabel cleans house.
And I actually have a funny story from the weekend, because I was down there, and the head PR person for this movie was asking me about the Fight Network, and he's like, wrestling? You mean like professional wrestling? I'm like, oh, yeah, we are a lot of professional wrestling. He's like, well, I actually used to be a referee in the Independence in Memphis, and I'm good friends with Jerry Lawler. I'm like, really? And he was telling me this story about how one time he came to referee the matches. He knows Corey Macklin. And he came to referee the match, and Lawler told the locker room, he's like, this is my buddy, he's done refereeing before, just leave him alone out there, don't pull any hazing shit. He's in the ring, and Mabel does a spot, and then he knocks into this guy, who's now the PR guy, takes his glasses, and he's like, referees don't wear glasses, threw them down, and he stomped on
them. Wow.
And he said, I never refereed again for those guys.
We might have that match in the Fight Network.
I don't know if it's in there, but yeah. If I spot this guy, he's now like, you know, high level executive here for a PR company.
He's moved up, yeah.
So yeah, that was Mabel. Number 12, everyone, Road Dogg with his double duty comes in and immediately eliminates Edge, which is very amusing in 2010.
It is, yes.
I don't know who this guy had favors with, but he was booked tremendously well in the biggest year
for shizzle.
In WWE. The lights go out, Undertaker's theme goes off, and the Acolytes and Midian take Mabel away, and this is the birth of Viscera. Undertaker appears at the entrance and hypnotizes Mabel, and Road Dogg is left by himself. If the match ended now, Road Dogg would be going to WrestleMania.
Yes. Mabel meets the Undertaker on the ramp, and he stares at the Undertaker's eyes and starts getting dizzy, and he is now converted.
So Mabel is taken away by what will become the Ministry of Darkness, way one of the more controversial groups in Vince Russo history.
Mm-hmm.
So next in is Gangrel.
Who's also doing double duty tonight.
Yes.
He is eliminated by the Road Dogg, and then we'll just run through the rest.
Yeah, let's go.
Kurgan.
Kurgan, who is now one of the stars of Sherlock Holmes.
Is he? Wow.
Yeah, I saw them. It was a shitty, shitty movie. Don't go see it.
Okay.
Al Snow, who's without head, who's been stolen by number 16, is Goldust. The Godfather, Kane, Kane comes in and just cleans house. He eliminates everybody. And then we get indie hospital workers come out in white straitjackets to take Kane back to the insane asylum. This angle, I do not remember at all. He was apparently in a mental institution, so Kane eliminates himself and runs through the crowd.
It was so stupid.
So he'd rather leave and give up a WrestleMania title shot than go back to the insane asylum.
It was basically, this whole chunk of stuff was completely meaningless.
There was no one in the ring that you ever could believe might win this Royal Rumble.
Yes.
Shamrock comes in, and this is when Vince comes back, and he's on commentary with Cole and Lawler under the assumption that he just wants to see someone win, and because Austin's gone, and he doesn't give a shit.
Mm-hmm. Then we have Billy Gunn, who earlier fought Shamrock, if you remember. He's entered number 20, and Shamrock immediately goes to work on Gunn's injured ankle. At this point, first of all, Tess comes back. Meanwhile, we see the Ministry put Mabel into a hearse.
And Vince notes, Mabel will never be the same. Because he's gained the gimmick change.
Ah, gotcha. And Austin, at this point, comes back driving the ambulance that he left in. Austin runs into the ring, eliminates Shamrock. Bossman comes out, then Triple H, then Val Venus, X-Pac.
Test is also in there.
Test, Mark Henry, Jeff Jarrett, D'Lo, Owen. Finally, number 30, China.
All this build-up for China. let me redo that because I had hiccups there. All this buildup for China. She enters in the first woman in Royal Rumble history and lasts 35 seconds. Austin mm-hmm. dumps her out. Awesome.
I thought it was a very interesting booking that they would do that. But great. I mean, you'd figure maybe some of the guys in the back would have had problems or something, but I don't know.
Now, something they always do now is they always build, get down to the final four, where it's all four guys that you could at least conceivably believe might win this. For this, they dumped out Hunter before these final four, and it comes down, I'm not going to count McMahon because he was on commentary and kind of out of the picture, but we're down to D'Lo, Owen, the Boss Man, and Austin. Like, can't even suspend disbelief that anyone but Austin is going to prevail here, though I would be wrong there.
You don't think Big Boss Man could have main evented WrestleMania that year?
Well, he had, if you look at Wikipedia, he lasted over 18 minutes in this Rumble way, so he was probably getting a little winded by this time. Hmm. Austin eliminates D'Lo, Owen, and Boss Man, surprisingly, and then Austin and McMahon, they fight to the outside, they're in the ring, and The Rock comes down to ringside. They fight on the apron, and Vince dumps out Austin to win in 56 minutes and 38 seconds, and as of this event, it's going to be The Rock versus Vince McMahon at WrestleMania 15.
Yes. The Rock and Vince McMahon. Austin and Vince McMahon. Or The Rock and Vince. Yeah.
Rock and Vince.
Yeah. You know what? This was a totally, totally overbooked Royal Rumble match. But I enjoyed, you know, the nostalgia of seeing all these guys come out one by one. The Royal Rumble is always one of my favorite types of matches out there. So
it's always a pretty fun show.
Yeah.
The focus was really not on the title shot at all. It was all about mm-hmm. Austin McMahon, which was your big feud at the time, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. the 100 grand, which I didn't mind too much because yeah. everything was going to change so much for the title picture. WrestleMania was another 2-3 months away. And it ends with something that was at least different at the time.
Yes. Like it or not, McMahon was the biggest heel in the company at the time.
For sure. And this was your biggest money-drawing feud
yeah.
in company history. So that was the focus of it. And, the WWF was doing monster business at this time, so it's hard to kind of criticize the main picture. I give this one a 7 out of 10.
I give it the same thing. The undercard was pretty weak, but... Mm-hmm. They had a really good main event with The Rock and Foley, and the Rumble match itself, to me, this whole show and this whole area of WWF was really made by the crowd. If the crowd was not as hot and into this stuff as much as they were, it would just be...
You know, that's really true. You know, like a hot crowd angles, definitely translates. My one negative about the Rumble is something they try to avoid now is that you at least have a handful of guys you think could win this. In this match, there was no one mm-hmm. outside of Austin you believed was going to win, so yeah. I guess in that sense, Vince was a bit of a surprise, but there was no one outside of that. You knew Hunter wasn't winning, and he was probably the next biggest star in this.
That's
match.
Right. That's right. I guess at the time, you're right. There weren't that many top-tier stars.
There was a lot of, you know, the mid-card was booked pretty well, and that's what I think is a positive of Russo at this point, was making the mid-carders mean something, mm-hmm. but they were never a threat to the top at this point, like looking up and down here. I mean, Test, Shamrock, Road Dogg. I mean, these guys were, those were your biggest mid-carders.
That's true.
So anyway, 7 out of 10. Next week, Way, we're going to review the first ever NWO sold-out pay-per-view from January of 97, and this is a horrible show.
Okay.
So, and we want to thank Dan the Mouth Lavransky.
That's right.
He has gone and done some cleaning and provided us with some tremendous shit that will be coming up in the next couple of months. Please go join us on the official Facebook group. No, the official...
Facebook group of Review Away.
Yes, and leave your comments, your thoughts on the Rumble from 99, and also what you'd like us to review coming up, Royal Rumbles or WrestleManias or any other miscellaneous events. You can leave feedback there. We always appreciate that. And next week I'm going to announce a contest. It's going to be our Royal Rumble contest. So I'll review with Way the details of that, and then we'll report them next week. But
awesome.
Way, we'll close out here with a tune. And whose choice is it this week?
I believe it's yours.
Oh, it's my choice.
Isn't it?
Okay.
I think it is, yeah.
Then we're going to go out with... I don't really have a great song to go out with, so I'm going to go out with a tune that I've been listening to death. And it's this song called 1901 by Phoenix.
I love that band.
Oh, I love this
song. I was
song.
Just listening to their one of their older records today. I hadn't heard the new one yet, but yeah.
It's been on my iPod, and I've listened to it the last 3 weeks solid. So we'll
That's
go
awesome.
Out with a little 1901.